Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Selective Hearing. I'm your host, Julie DeMar, and this week I am here with very special guest, Rolando Hyman, and we are going to have a conversation about men's mental health. So, fellas who listen to me every week, this one is especially for you. So, Rolando, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here this week.
It's great to be here, Julie. Thanks for the invitation. I'm looking forward to our little chat today.
I am too. So before I get started, I just love to dedicate the beginning of the show to each guest and give you the opportunity to just share your story and how you got started on this journey.
Well, Judy, I grew up in urban Kingston, Jamaica. My background and the reason why I segued into this field of choice is, you know, I recall being a young man growing up in a community. Gang violence was a huge thing. You know, I grew up in a community where I literally heard extremity of gang violence going on for over 2 hours. You had to be in your house wondering, when is it going to end? And a lot of my childhood friends, boys that I grew up with, you know, in space of 2 years, I can recall losing anywhere between 12 to 14 of those guys tragically because of bad decisions, getting involved in gang violence. And at the time, I wasn't sure how to deal with it. I was really sort of lost in a maze of, you know, the toxicity of the community, the things that came across as being normal, the societal expectations and all of that. And so I remember just dealing with those different traumatic events in my life as, you know, it's normal, man, or whatever. You know, move on. And, you know, years later, as I started to expose myself more to a different environment, I realized how my life was impacted negatively from those experiences that I had. So, you know, I found faith and then I went back to university. And, you know, the funny piece is this, Julie, is that when I left high school, I was 17 years of age. But I consider myself to be a high school dropout because when I left high school, I had no record to show that I even attended. I went through the process. And years later, like when I was almost 30, is when I went back to university. I realized that it was never too late. I went back to university, did my first degree. And I started to take that deep dive into my own personal growth and development. And I realized that I needed to work on myself. So after I completed my first degree, 2 years later, I went on to do my second degree in psychotherapy. And that's when it hit me that I was psychologically and emotionally messed up. I had a lot of baggage. I had a lot of things that I was holding on to, or a lot of perceptions and perspectives that was just not healthy for me as a man. And so I remember I went off to one of my classes and one of the professors said, you know, all of you are in here who are studying to become therapists, you need to go get your own therapy. And I laughed at the teacher in my mind. I really laughed. I'm like, man, what's her problem? I got things down. I'm like the perfect man. What would I need to go do? Right? I'm from Jamaica. I'm cool, calm, collective. You know, who needs therapy? I thought. I mean, the first couple of sessions that I attended, Julie, literally, I was just there for the show because, hey, I needed to pass my course. I had 10 sessions, whatever I got to lose. But when I showed up the third time, the therapist called me out. And it was from that moment that I realized that it's now or never, okay? And the first time I really allowed myself to fully experience and emotions was in those therapy sessions. And I realized that the trauma and the grief that I was going through, it was deep and it was really, really influencing my personality, my character, my outlook in life. And I had to come to grips with telling my story to this therapist, breaking down several times and recognizing that I needed to give myself permission to grieve and to acknowledge how that made me feel. Instead of just being angry, I learned that there were other emotions involved that I needed to be aware of as a part of my healing journey. I started to do my own work, and I spent years working on myself, Julie. And then, I remember over a decade ago, literally almost a decade and a half, I sat into a shared an office space with two very good buddy of mine. They're still good friends of mine right now. And I said to them, I wanted to take this passion that I have for men's mental health to the next level. And they said, Rolanda, you should go for it. And I'm going to name call now. I'm talking about my buddy Lon, Lon Jones. He works for the government of Alberta. And also my good friend Dominic, he works with men too. And I remember they said, Rolanda, go for it because I think you would do well at it. And I said, okay, but I started to continue that deep dive. And when the pandemic showed up, I said, you know what? Now is the time for me to get really more passionate, to reach more men. And hence, I call up a friend of mine. He is a graphic designer out of Q3 Studios. He's in Ottawa. So you see how broad I started to spread my wing. I call him up and I said, hey, you have a studio, and a shout out to Q3. And when I call him up, he said, what do you have in mind? And I said, this is it. He called up his graphic design, and we all sort of had the conversation. They came up with the brand XY Spark, and I said, when we chatted, I said XY Spark is perfect. Why? It captures the essence of men, XY chromosome. We want to spark that. We want to bring some balance. So XY Spark was born, and I started to connect with more men across the planet. So far, XY Spark, I've reached men in Europe, in Africa, I've reached men here in Canada, I've reached men in the United States, men from the Caribbean. And so the passion continues, Julie. And hence I came up with what I call my everyday mantra, that personal development is not an event, it's a lifestyle. And so every single day, I myself seek to expose myself to growth opportunities. And when I talk to men, I help men to understand that I'm not here because I feel I'm better than I've been through the drugs, I've been through the alcohol, I've been divorced, I've been there, done that. I've experienced the depression, I've experienced anxiety, I've experienced severe loss and grief. I've had many near-death experiences where several times I'm not even sure how or why I'm still here. But then I say, hey, well, I know why I'm here, because I need to do this work that I'm doing now to let more men understand that, guess what? We can do better. And that's why I'm here. So why am I in this space, Julie? My passion is that I seek to create a safe space for men to normalize conversations about our mental health and to understand that there is still the capacity for us to be better than how we are right now.
I don't know if I share with you, I'm a boy mom. So I have two little boys. And the whole journey with selective hearing started with me recognizing I have some stuff I need to clean up. And I started cleaning it up when I found out I was going to have my first child. And as I'm cleaning up my mess and learning that I don't really know much and I have to unlearn and relearn some things, a big thing was learning about the different capacities and growth and development stages of a child, and how to meet them where they are and how to nurture them in those spaces. And a big thing with that was emotionally, meet their emotions, how to cater to their emotions, how to support those emotions so that they can learn how to regulate them. Emotional regulation is something that I am very big on in this house because I don't want angry men in the streets one day. Like, so I, even though I'm not a man, I do feel like I have a huge responsibility and obligation as a mother to do my best to raise good men. And a big thing in learning about that journey is it's not certain things that I thought men should look like. So I want to get into those expectations, those societal expectations, and those traditional community and parenting practices that we've been using over the years to raise our children, to raise our men. And those things actually discourage men from expressing their emotions. So my first question for you is, how can we begin to challenge those processes and move away from them because they're, outdated belief systems?
Julie, there's a fear that is oftentimes there, even in our own cultural community. Okay. And when I say this, I'm not just talking about in the Afro-American community. It's there in every community because I work with men from several different race, class, and ethnicities. I've worked with men, and it seems to be a similar thing. There's a cultural piece that sinks deep. It's almost as if you come out of this, you're committing the unpardonable sin. There's a cultural piece, there's the societal piece, there's the spiritual piece, right? So the layers, Julie, are so deep, and sometimes the layers get deeper because guess what? My mom, my grandfather, my grandmother, they do not allow me to go outside of this bubble, quote unquote. Because going outside of this bubble means that you're failing the masculine code. You're not a real man if you do that. Okay? Here is where I'm going with this in response to your question. When I was doing research, Julie, I came upon the expression intellectual humility. And intellectual humility challenges us to ask this question, and I'm quoting now. The question that we're trying to ask is this, quote, "What if all that I was taught is flawed," end quote. All of us on this journey of self-discovery, we need to ask that question. And we need to be brutally honest with the answer that comes back. And here's why that's important. Sometimes it's hard for us to break those cycles, Julie. And here's why, because respectfully, I'm saying this to grandmothers and grandfathers and moms and dads. We resist asking these questions, Julie, and here's why. Because we believe that what our grandparents or our parents say is almost as if it is a direction from God Himself. We dare not question it. All right? Because questioning it could mean we're rude, we're out of place, we are not following through with the expectations. But we need to ask these questions so we can find ourselves. Right? In psychology, we talk about the ideal and the real self. Okay? The ideal needs to be in harmony with the real self for there to be peace of mind. And the challenge that many of us have as men is that we are not, and I want to say this cautiously, we are not bold enough to step down off of these platforms and say, hey, you know what? Something is out and I need to get help. Real men don't do that. Real men don't ask for help. Real men suck it up and be tough. Real men find alternate ways to deal with. So when you're talking about emotional intelligence, and one of the authors that I read, Daniel Goleman, he speaks about this, and I want to quote specifically from Goleman here. Goleman says, "Self-awareness takes the form of recognizing your strengths and weaknesses and seeing yourself in a positive but realistic light," end quote. That's one of the first places that we need to pause when we're on this journey. Self-awareness is a part of the intellectual, the emotional literacy piece, rather. And as men, we dare not admit that there's a weakness in me. Years ago, I had a conversation with a guy, and he said this. He said, "Rolando, my partner, I dare not show any vulnerability around her because she'll think I'm not man enough." So there are those men who are in these relationships with women who they themselves don't understand, or their expectation of a real man is he needs to be hard-backed, emotionally inaccessible, and locked in his own cocoon. But he dare not show any vulnerability because doing that's him telling her, I'm not good enough for you.
I was just thinking about that video that I sent you as being a part of the societal expectations of what masculinity looks like. And that main piece, and I'm going to speak from me and my own experience growing up, what my grandfather should look like, what my father should look like, what my uncles is a man, and his duty is to provide financially. There was never any discussion about a man is supposed to be emotionally supportive or be supported emotionally, and that a man is supposed to be able to safely occupy certain spaces outside of working, bringing home money, and going back to work. So I wanted to talk about that today with you.
Now, Julie, I'm going to say this, and there are a lot of guys who might be of the same cultural background and otherwise. And there are a lot of guys who would probably are going to comment below on this video or come look for me and say, hey, you need to be stoned in the center. Here's what I have to say to that. More men need to realize that they are as equally responsible, rather, for the emotional atmosphere in their home as their partners. Provision is not just physical. And a man in his home who is being a man in his fullest capacity is a man who is able to provide physically, socially, psychologically, emotionally, and financially for those who he leads. Now, leadership in the home of a man is not just finances. And there are a lot of guys who they believe I'm providing, so what's your problem? What are you providing? I live in a community where, it's the oil capital of Canada. So there are guys who they are providing well for their families, but more than that is needed. Those marriages still go haywire, right? Even though he's providing all that she needs financially. He's not emotionally accessible. Okay. His kids don't know him, but they live in a nice house. They have all the toys. They have brand new vehicles that they're driving, right? She's staying at home and doing well, but something is missing. What's missing? What's missing is that, is this presence. And presence is you're there to change a diaper. Did I say that? There are some guys who run away from that. You're there to help get your kids ready for school in the morning. Not just drop them off. You're there to help make breakfast, okay? You're there to prepare a meal. You're there, to go running up and down with your kid, to go bike riding. You're there. You're there to provide an ear for your partner when she's down. And there's this dance that oftentimes as men we miss because you see, the dance is, I call it WES, work, eat, and sleep. That's the dance that a lot of men are stuck in. Work, eat, sleep. Work, eat, sleep. That's a cycle, okay? And we get so overly consumed with that to the point where we don't realize that we're at home, but we're still absent. That's a cycle that needs to break. That's why our mental health is the way it is. But as men, what do we do now to overcompensate for that? We drink a bit more, we smoke a bit more marijuana. We do a bit more drugs. We get more involved in some high-risk lifestyles. We sit in front of the TV a little bit longer, watching more sports than we normally would. Okay. We get frustrated. We get angry. We do everything else, but we're not stopping and doing what Goldman says, recognizing that, hey, you know what? Something is off. I need help. We have to realize now, Julie, that men who are emotionally literate are able to acknowledge their vulnerabilities, seek help, speak out, and learn how to be in tune with not just their emotions, but those with whom they interact.
It makes me think, I shared with you in the pre-interview, like my husband and I met when I was 24. I'm gonna be 40 here. And he's 44 now. That was a long time ago. And I would like to say there was many stages in development ago, because where you are at 24 and 29 is far different than 40 and 44. But who I was, and I'll speak for that, as far as coming into a relationship with an ideal of a man is just supposed to provide. That is the definition of a good man. Is he financially responsible? You guys aren't going to be in the street. You guys are going to be okay. You know, I was able under that umbrella to pursue all of my dreams, goals, passions, and I was able to go to school and do all these things. And then when we become parents, we get married, we become parents, and that narrative starts to shift. Well, I need a little bit more. I'm dealing with postpartum depression now. I'm dealing with all of these different stages of grief because I'm realizing my family isn't healthy and I have to leave them behind. And he's still working, still providing, still, you know, being all the things that he has always been. But now I see him differently. Like, hey, I need a little help over here. And he doesn't understand what I'm talking about. Where is this coming from? Why are you changing? It's not broke. Don't try to fix it now, Julie. And that puts us in a different dance that I'm sure, and I'm speaking for men and women, just from my perspective right now, and as far as relationships go, because I feel like this is where divorce happens. I'm very open about this. I feel like this is where we decide if this is going to work anymore or not, because we're growing apart. In this space, I found with myself having a very different upbringing than my husband as well, coming from a very dysfunctional, abusive environment. Is I had to find grace for myself and understanding that all the things I need from him, I didn't even know how to give to myself. Like all the things that I needed, I just needed in general. And so as I'm learning how to give myself love, be patient with myself, be emotionally intelligent, you know, as I'm learning how to do all these things with myself and with my kids, I was like, it took a lot of time to get here for me. So it's only right that I extend that same amount of grace and patience to him. So as I'm learning things, I'm like, well, babe, come here, let's talk about this. Guess what I learned? Or, hey, babe, and I'll send him something, read this. I wrote my first book, and the first book is a lot about my relationship with self-talk and the arguments that I would have with him about the things that he wasn't doing that he wasn't even a part of. I would have a whole argument with him in my mind. I would work it out in my mind, and he'll come home and I'll be so mad at him and he wouldn't know what is going on. What happened? Why is she mad? What happened? I already worked it out. I'm mad at you. It's done. So I wrote the book. I wrote down all my feelings. I wrote the things that I was doing and that the things that I was recognizing that I was doing and how that was kind of also contributing to a disconnect between us. And I had him read it so he could understand. And a big thing I told him recently was, okay, all the things that you want to say, write it down, because I know he's not a big talker like me either. I'm the social butterfly. Write it down and then give it to me. And I don't care what it is, like, or when he does it, just write it down and give it to me. I'm not going to be offended by it, because that's another thing, being offended by what your partner has to say to you about how your actions are affecting them. So this is just what I found. And then I was like, and then if all of these things don't work, then we have a bigger problem. But I was like, I can't put myself in safe spaces and I can't love myself and grow myself and then expect my partner to come over here. Where I am, I have to allow them the space to grow and do those things as well. But that was me getting in my own way in the beginning because of the expectation of a man. Like, I expected you all this time just to be financially a provider. And like, I was okay with you not having feelings. And now I want you to have feelings. And I didn't even stop to think in the beginning that maybe you don't know how to feel those, or maybe you're afraid of those. So, as a wife with a husband who we got together when we were babies, and now we're growing into being grown-ups and raising babies, I was moved to say that to the listeners today, especially, and then even get your advice on that.
You know, Julie, notice what you said, and the powerful piece about what you said, is that the work you went on a journey, you realized that, wait a minute, maybe my partner doesn't understand the journey that I'm on. So how do I invite him to be a part of that? That's insight. But secondly is credit to your partner for this. He was receptive to what you were sharing, right? So even though he might have not understood your journey, he was open enough to say, hey, maybe she's onto something. Let me open myself up to it. And the challenge that many of us have as men, Julie, is that willingness to open up is not there. So they talk about this leads to divorce. That's why it gets there, because I don't have a problem, right? You're the one that's always having these meltdowns. You're the one that's always going on these rants. You know, I'm perfect. I'm out of here. Versus, hey, wait a minute. Let me pause to check in. So notice what happened. You and your partner went on this journey together. You started to evolve in your growth. You recognize that, hey, this guy's important to me. Let me invite him. You gave him an invitation. He took hold of that invite and he started to participate. So now you guys were actually engaged in this process of growth together, right? So you could have those tough conversations together and you can start moving now one layer at a time as you go up the ladder of your growth in your relationship. Understanding this, that the discovery that you made, Julie, happened because you were willing and able and open to give yourself permission for that to happen. It is in giving yourself permission you were able to engage in self-talk and self-growth to ignite your self-worth so you can move to that next level. So you refuse to stay stuck in your societal or your culturally created comfort zone. And that's when we have issues. Refusal to open and explore some of those baggages that we have is where we get distracted many times because we're not willing to pause and say, hey, maybe I'm the problem. That creates a powerful shift in my perspective as a person and in how I relate to those around me that I am expecting to be a part of my life.
That was a hard conversation one day, saying it's not everyone else. It is definitely you. But I was very good at being a victim. So it was everybody else for a long period of time. And so I was like, well, you don't talk to people. You're not so nice when you speak to people, or you're not so nice in your treatment of other people. So why are you expecting people to be the same way towards you? That was a hard conversation. So I would like to talk about balance. Balancing our emotional needs and expressions with, our traditional roles and responsibilities.
When you talk about that piece, you know, Julie, I normally, you know, when I'm doing, when I'm engaged in doing whether it's life coaching or you know, psychotherapy, whether I'm working with a couple, an individual, whatever that looks like, or doing it in a group setting, there are some questions that I like to sort of highlight as it relates to creating balance. It's wrapping it around a perspective of what does a win-win situation, what is it going to look like? All right. And understanding that there may be times when I need to step back and do the pros and cons of what are my expectations here and what's reality. Because if you want to strike a balance, it's going to be important for you to look at, okay, these are my expectations, but what's the reality? Because if your expectations are not lined up with your reality, you're setting yourself up to be disappointed over and over again, right? Which is why you have to look at the situation for what it is and be able to say to yourself, you know what? It looks like I'm dealing with a scorpion. I can't expect it to be a butterfly because that's unrealistic expectation. So balancing that is first looking at what's the reality. This is the reality. Okay, because this is the reality, I may have to look at adjusting my expectations. I'm not self-selling yourself out or don't have any values, but I have to look at, hey, is there a way to me for me to adjust my expectations so that I'll be better able to relate and interact? Or do I need to say, hey, you know what? This is where I need to set a boundary and say, to Rolando, Rolando, thanks for the offer. This does not work for me. I look at other options. But that's how you've got to really process it. What's the reality? What are my expectations? Let me give you an example. Let's say you want to get a $100,000 loan. All right. Reality is there are different places that you can go. You can go to a bank, you can go to one of these money market places, same day loan, wherever. But you have to look at what's the interest, what your budget can manage as you take that money and so on and so forth. You will now make an informed decision based on what each organization is offering you. All right. Or you may say, hey, you know what? I'm not going anywhere. I have a rich uncle. I can get that $100,000 with no interest and I'll get enough time to pay it back. You have to realistically look at your options and then you've got to make an informed decision based on that. That's how you maintain the balance. No, nothing impulsive. All right. No putting the cart before the horse. Informed decision, pros and cons, and then asking yourself, okay, how will this commitment or this decision bring value to my life?
I'm enjoying this conversation so much. If you notice, I'm just taking it all in. Like, yes. And I keep looking at your chair because one thing that I always talk about with my guests is how my chair is so cute, but it's uncomfortable. And I'm like, your chair is cute and it looks comfortable. I have to adjust every once in a while.
Julie, you're funny.
I am really enjoying this conversation so much. And I can't wait to play it for my husband. He usually listens to me when he's at work. So I can't wait for him to hear it and give me feedback.
Good. Yeah, that's good. Yes.
So I want to talk about how this can improve because I am all about the ripple effect. So when the men in our communities start to feel safe with their emotions and learn that it's actually strong of them, very strong of them to feel and be healthy in that. From your perspective, how does that improve our families, our communities, and all of our relationships? Let's talk about that positive impact.
Julie, now you're going to make me sit up in my chair. Because, Julie, let me say it to you this way. We have to understand this as men. Number one, asking for help is not weakness, it's wise. And as men, we have got to learn to change the meaning of weakness. Once upon a time, weakness is asking for help. Once upon a time, weakness is saying, I don't know. Once upon a time, weakness is saying, you know what, I'm tired. Once upon a time, weakness is to say, I don't know the answer. All right? And we were naturally cultured, men, and I'm going to say men, most or all of us as men, we were naturally cultured to bottle things up. Okay? And we are masters at bottling things up. There's not a man on this planet who doesn't bottle things up. He could be the CEO of a multi-billion dollar company. He could be an angel investor. He bottles things up. And over time, we are starting to learn now more and more that it is because of this continuous stigma that we face as men, why we live our lives the way we do. And so we have got to be compassionate now about breaking the stamina of the stigma around men's mental health. And breaking that means we have got to start normalizing these conversations as men. We have got to start realizing that if another man comes to you, man talking to man, and sharing with you about his feelings, don't make him feel as if he's not worthy. He's failing, he's weak. A lot of guys who play sports, look at what happens to them not too long after. They end up in a terrible mess. Guys who are making millions a year end up being broke because of high-end lifestyle, drugs and parties and womanizing and stuff. What's going on with him? He has not yet grasped what it really means to be a man outside of that expectation. But when we start normalizing these conversations as men, we remember that our number one responsibility, the first responsibility that we have, is not to seek to be the best celebrity. Look at Will Smith. What happened to him? Why did he went up and assault his good friend? What is going on? My number one responsibility is not to try to be the greatest athlete. My number one responsibility is not to try to be the greatest CEO or bank manager. My number one responsibility is not even to try to be the best husband or father or sibling. But my number one responsibility is to remember that the first thing I need to be okay with is being human. And when, as men, we allow ourselves to be human, we'll feel, because we're emotional creatures. We will feel. And when we feel, we'll be able to say, hey, you know what? Today, I'm not feeling it. Why do you think many of us, as men, we find out that we're really sick years after because we don't even go do a checkup? When we allow ourselves to be human, we'll go and do our yearly checkups. We'll feel. When we allow ourselves to be human, you know, it's funny. My youngest son, I remember, he's almost going into his double digit now. When he was six, he came to me and he asked me a question. When he asked me a question, I said to him, Daddy doesn't know about my son. And he said, but Daddy, how do you not know? You're supposed to know everything. And you know what I said to him? I said to him, you know what, son? This daddy doesn't know everything. Be human, guys. Feel, speak, ask for help. And if in asking for help, you're judged for it, too bad for who is judging you. But it's good for you because you're doing what you need to do in order to be human, which means you can connect with your kids, you can connect with your wife. You can be emotionally accessible in your relationship. And I'm telling you, your mental health will never be the same. And that's how we're going to break the stamina of the stigma around men's mental health. It has to start with you and with me normalizing these conversations, talking to each other, you know, stop talking about hockey and football and politics and talk about you, talk about what's going on. Hey, buddy, you know, I realize I've been smoking a lot more cigarettes than I normally would. I notice every night I go home, I'm drinking more beer than I would want to. I notice that I'm not going out as much. I'm isolating. I notice I'm short-fused in my re- What's going on? Your mental health needs to be addressed. And I would say this, guys, address it. Yes, things are challenging. I get it. But here's what I want you to understand. If you try to do it by yourself, it's going to be chaotic. How do I know? The last statistic that came out in Canada alone, just Canada, 4,500 suicides happen a year. 75% of that is men. What is that telling you? It's telling you that you, as a man, you have a responsibility to break this cycle. You have responsibility to speak up. You know, we laugh a lot and we say, you know, girls are always talking, but they're not committing suicide as we're committing suicide three times as much as women. Why? Because we're not talking about the things that we should be talking about because of fear, because of pride, because of ego, because we fear that we're going to fail society. But think about it, 75%, guys. 75%. All these kids, they deserve to have a father. All these moms, they deserve to have a dad to help them parent these kids. All these siblings, they needed you. So you see, sometimes the lie that we tell ourselves and the story is that nobody cares. Well, how do you know that? You haven't talked to anybody. You haven't reached out to anybody. Well, if we're going to break the stigma of the stigma, we have to reach out, guys. Come out of those comfort zones. Stop listening to your internal critique so we can break the stamina.
That when you were talking about that, it made me think about the negative narrator and the influence that it has in your life, and how, just again, from my experience, I have such a relationship with my negative narrator that I gave her a name, and her name is Monica. And then she got her own story. But I think about that with my husband and with my kids. Like, even though I affirm my kids and I love my kids and I affirm my husband and I love him, when he goes out into the world, what is he telling himself? What has he convinced himself of? Like, what does he think that he's not worthy of or good enough for, or I shouldn't talk about? Like, that when I was talking about that argument I would have with him in his head, in my head before he got home from work about things. What is he telling himself about me
Yeah.
or the kids or his friends or whatever? And I know, like, a lot of I have men listeners that listen to me every week, and you hear me say it all the time, but self-care really is not selfish. And I know I say it to my ladies all the time when we're talking about being wives and being moms and taking care of yourself. But, like, fellas, it's very important for you to take on some self-care practices and step away. Like, it's okay. Just as much for you as it is for mom. Because if you can't show up for you, you're not going to be able to properly show up for us. And it's the same. It's the exact same. Just flip everything I always say to the ladies and apply that to yourself, because it's the same. And I want to talk about creating support systems for men with you on this journey. How wives, sisters, mothers, friends in the community can encourage and support their men, their brothers, to be emotionally vulnerable and safe in that.
Yeah. Well, Julie, I want to refer back to what I said earlier because the support that men need that I'm learning is men need a support that's not judgmental, right? Because it's one of the most challenging thing. I've worked with men who, they say, Rolando, why didn't I know this 40 years ago? Rolando, I grew up in a home where my dad, he wasn't, I grew up in a home with a single mom, and she taught me to be a man the best way she knew how. Here I am now, and all this new information is coming in. Now, when we talk about grooming and growth, we talk about the nature-nurture theory, for example, where we become products of our environment. Okay? And so here we have all these boys who grew up in these homes where, they are capturing data. I'm capturing data from my grandfather, my father, my coach, my older brother, right? My sister, who sometimes would be, playing the role of parent when mom is not around or whatever. And I'm capturing data. And as I grow older, I'm using that data now to create me, right? This is how I'm supposed to be as a man. Now, here I am, and I'm in this relationship, right, with my significant other. And I'm really passionate that the way I'm doing things is the right way. But my partner is not, she's not digging it. It's not going down well with her. Like, when are you going to get with the program here, man? This is not it. And so there's a friction that happens consistently in there because for her, this is the ultimate here. This is set in stones. And what you find is for her, it's set in stones, and for him, it is. And so the friction happens consistently. So creating a safe space for these men means that I've got to slow down and I've got to ask myself, okay, let me see how I can connect with this person where they're at. That is one of the first places that you need to go. Because in order for the friction to get less and less and eventually, disappear, I need to seek to connect with my partner where they are at, so that we can have more understanding and more clarity, so that we can all start at least moving together in the same direction. So if a woman wants to look at creating a safe space and supporting a man, it's going to be a two-way process. Okay, find out where he's at, find out specifically where you're at and what you're willing to invest and what risk you're willing to take in order to connect with him where he's at, which means surface level conversations has got to stop. I've connected with a person and saying, hey, you know what? It's like someone say, hey, I know Julie, but I don't know Julie, which means for 10 years, for 20 years, for 15 years, you're in a relationship with Julie, but you only know about Julie what Julie feels it's okay for you to know. But sometimes Julie's behaviors throw you far off that you're wondering, what did I say? What did I do? It doesn't necessarily mean you said or did. It just means that that part of Julie that she has never revealed to you, when you say certain things or act certain way, it triggers her, but you're not understanding it because Julie has never really opened that other department and say, hey, I'm okay for you to come in. It's safe. So it's hard for you to create a safe space for a man if he still has all these different compartments. He has opened this one already, but hey, you need to get to here. And then the one most closest to him, this one, he's protecting himself in here because he's still not sure for whatever reason. So it becomes hard for you unless he now is willing to say, I trust you and I trust myself that if I invite you in, you will not take advantage of, but you'll protect and preserve.
I talk a lot about journaling on this show for the ladies. How do you feel about journaling for men? And the reason why I'm asking this question is because I found that journaling was an effective tool in not only helping slow down everything and to get the things out, but it was a nice reflection piece when I want to go back and I say like assess my growth, because you don't see it. Like, and I don't think that we realize that it's not like this big thing, like this big magic trick. You wave a wand and boom, I'm here. Like, there's just all these little small steps and small changes, and you might not even recognize them. But then when you go back and read, you're like, oh wow, okay, I can see that. So how do you feel about that being a good tool for men and helping them measure their progress in this journey?
It is a powerful tool, Julia. Do some name calling. Guys like Tony Robbins, who has been on the platform for years, is one of those things that he speaks about as well, right? As a psychotherapist and life coach, it's something that I recommend for a lot of my male clients to do, because your journal doesn't talk back. Your journal doesn't judge you. Your journal gives you helps to bring perspective because now you can take some of what's going on here, put it on paper, and look at it and be able to assess whether or not it really makes sense. Because I recommend journal thoughts as many as this. As men, we like to sometimes you hear men say, man, there are so many different thoughts going on in my head. A good way to capture those thoughts is through journaling. Okay. So I would say, hey, journaling is an amazing thing. I'd recommend for any man to get into the practice of journaling. Because what it does, it helps you to take some of the thoughts that are racing here, put them down on paper, and you can slow them down and you can better able assess those thoughts. And why I like journaling is journaling, cognitive behavioral therapy, or is also part of you capturing your thoughts and challenging your thoughts. All right. So to journal is a good entrance into getting more acquainted with those thoughts. And you can also even use that journal to say, hey, wait a minute, this is what I've been saying to myself, but that makes no sense, man. Or this is what I've been saying. Okay, I know what to do now differently. So journal is a great tool, Julie, and it's good that you mentioned that. I recommend it for any man to do. It's not something that women do. It's something that human beings do. Real people do it.
So let's talk about your books and your program that you offer.
So Julie, right now there are three ebooks that I have. It's on Amazon: Masculinity Reset, Renewed, and Reload. And these are just little nuggets that I put there for men who may say, hey, I'm busy, I don't have time, they can get the ebook. Just reading these, I share some of my own stories in there, all right, so that they can get some perspective. And then the next one is the book, Giving Myself Permission to Grow, 7 Solutions for Personal Development. It's a book that I've written. It's well researched. It's not a huge book. There's a workbook as well in the back where each chapter you read, you can answer questions from that and create some sort of a strategy. I talk about self-care, create some sort of a self-care strategy of what you're going to be doing going forward. This book specifically, I wrote it for people who need just to get some insight. It shows you how to change your mindset from a problem mindset to a solution thinking mindset. All right. So give myself permission to grow. It's a book that I would say, hey, even a kid can read it. All right. Language is simple and clear to the point, and it helps you on that journey of personal growth and development as you evolve from day to day.
You have a program for men, correct, that they can do? Is it
Yes.
a coaching
Yes.
program?
Yes. So right now, Julie, the programs that I've created for men, I have several. Some it's just like, a couple hours or so just for a reset. But my premium program, it's called a Masculinity Blueprint. And this is a program that I offer virtually, and it's for men who are really ready to do the work. Why I say men who are ready? Because it's a 10 to 12 month commitment. And you and I meet at least twice a month, and we go through the rudiments of dealing with trauma, dealing with grief, dealing with low self-worth, dealing with any addictions, dealing with anger, going all the way through to ending that program with creating some sort of a new mindset and perspective. And this program, Julie, you can access that program. You can find me wherever you can access the program. You can find me on xyspark.org. You sign up for that program. I'll meet with you in the virtual space, and I'll work with you. It's a program of self-growth and self-discovery. It's a program that has taken me years to build, but some of the testimonials are there on my YouTube channel of men who have done the program, and I'm pretty excited to see how many lives has been changed so far from this program.
Can you share, your social media and websites? And then I will also link these things in the show details and on the resource page at selectivehearingshow.com. So everyone listening, I'm getting ready to tell you again, you're going to get it three ways. You're going to get it in the show details. You're going to get it on the resource page, and you're getting it right now from Rolando himself. So there's absolutely no excuse. You understand? No excuse for you to say, well, I couldn't get it or I didn't know, because I'm giving it to you right now.
Yes, Julie, thank you. So, on Instagram, you can find me. It's XY Spark. Any social media handle you look on, it's under XY Spark. Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, and of course, my website, xyspark.org. Right? You can email me, you can book a call on the link on Instagram. You see it there, and guys, I'm telling you, I'm not just doing this because I'm doing this because I've in my own life I've experienced a lot of change, and my journey continues, right? My mantra is personal development is not an event, it's a lifestyle. And every single day, I seek to engage in doing the work on myself so that I can engage and do the work with you, right? I offer these programs really one-on-one. I offer them in groups. What I find is a lot of men, they opt for the one-on-one because it's more private. I am totally okay with that. Whatever you choose, you sign up, we connect, and we start the ball rolling. Because, guys, guess what? You deserve to live a fulfilled, happy life. You don't need to be stuck. You need to break free. Okay? And our program of personal growth and development helps you on that journey.
Okay, so now I have to ask you the big show question. I love closing the show on this question, and that is, what does selective hearing mean to you?
Selective hearing to me, Julie, is. And let's go back to where you talk about that internal dialogue. Okay. And the internal dialogue is me listening to or following through with whatever I perceive to be correct based on my preference. Okay. I can be selective based on my comfort zone and what I prefer. And I could continue to live my life that way for decades because, hey, this is what sits better for me. So being selective is often because, hey, you know what? This is what I know. This is my comfort zone. This is my preference. And anything that goes outside of that, I turn my back on it. I resist it, right? I run in the opposite direction, right? That is my, perspective on what being selective is.
I want to thank you for being here with me. I really enjoyed our conversation. And everyone, again, head over to selectivehearingshow.com, hit the resources page, and right there you will find Rolando's picture and a button straight to his website. And check him out, ask any questions that you may have. And if you have any questions for me, you can always reach me at selectivehearingshow.com or at selectivehearingshow on all social media. And once again, thank you for being here with me today. I really enjoyed our conversation. And Rolando promised me that we can plan a live. So everyone, look out for that. We will do a live show on my social media and you can ask him more questions. And everyone else, I will be back on Wednesday with a brand new solo episode. So until next time, this is Selective Hearing.